So even if you are, say, a teenage boy sitting in high school biology right now, or a guy in his 20s navigating a new corporate job, or, a grandfather enjoying retirement menopause is happening to you right now.
Yeah, I know that sounds like a really provocative claim to make right off the bat.
It does, right? Like you might think it's this biological event that's completely disconnected from your day-to-day reality, but the truth is it's actively shaping your family dynamics, your workplace, and really the whole society you live in every single day.
Exactly. And when you actually strip away the social stigma and just look at the sheer biological and societal scale of this transition, I mean, the idea that half the population can just quietly endure this massive physiological transformation without it deeply affecting the other half, it's just mathematically and logically absurd.
Totally absurd. And dismantling that absurdity is exactly what we're getting into in this deep dive. Today, we're looking at this really brilliant, eye-opening blog article by Peru. It's titled Man on Menopause.
Such a great piece.
It really is, because the entire argument here is that we have to completely reframe how we view this transition. Peru argues that it's a universal human issue, not just this, quote unquote, women's issue that just gets whispered about behind closed doors.
Right, and we're going to take that core philosophy from Peru's article and merge it with this massive stack of medical research, historical texts, and some truly mind-bending neuroscience data we've got in front of us.
Yeah, just to figure out what is actually happening. But I guess to really grasp the scale of the societal impact, we first have to understand the microscopic, like the cellular reality right
Yeah, we
now.
have to look inside the body
Yeah.
because the medical baseline, the way we define this event on paper, it barely scratches the surface of the lived experience.
Well, let's start with that baseline because I'll admit I always just sort of assumed menopause was this overarching vague term for getting older as a woman, but it's actually highly
It's
specific.
very specific. So the World Health Organization defines it as exactly 12 consecutive months without a menstrual period.
12.
Right. That 12-month mark is basically a line in the sand signifying the permanent end of natural reproductive potential. But, treating that as the entire story is like saying a hurricane is just a lot of wind.
Right.
The real biological story here is driven by this dramatic systemic decline in estrogen.
Which brings us to the first massive misconception, I think, because for the longest time, I just thought of estrogen as like the female sex hormone.
Oh, yeah, most people do.
Right, like it regulates the reproductive cycle and that's its job, that's it. But Peru makes it very clear that it is not just a sex hormone.
Not by a long shot. I mean, estrogen is a critical signaling molecule for your overall physiological function. There are estrogen receptors located in almost every single major organ system in the human body.
Wow, every major system.
Basically, yeah. We're talking about the central nervous system, the skeletal system, your cardiovascular system, the liver, the lungs, even your immune cells. They all rely on estrogen to function optimally.
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and it's kind of like estrogen is the Wi-Fi router for your body.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so when you hit menopause, it isn't just that. Like the wireless printer in the home office disconnects. It's the whole smart home suddenly going offline. The thermostat starts glitching. The security cameras go blind. The lights are just flickering randomly.
That analogy actually maps perfectly onto the biology,
Yeah.
especially when we talk about the thermostat part.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because one of the most common symptoms is vasomotor instability, which, people just call hot flushes. And what's actually happening there is that the hypothalamus in the brain, which is the body's literal thermostat, it relies heavily on estrogen to regulate temperature.
So when the Wi-Fi signal drops,
The hypothalamus gets completely confused.
yeah.
It suddenly perceives a totally normal body temperature as dangerously hot. So it triggers this massive cooling response.
Wow.
Yeah, the blood vessels dilate, the skin flushes, and the sweat glands just go into absolute overdrive to cool down a body that honestly wasn't actually overheating in the first place.
That is wild. The smart home is literally blasting the AC because the sensor is broken. And nowhere is the effect of the signal drop more evident or, frankly, more shocking than in the brain itself. I was reading through the interview transcript with Dr. Lisa Moscone. She's the neuroscientist who specializes in the menopausal brain. And the way she describes the brain's reliance on estrogen completely changed how I view this whole thing.
Her work is so groundbreaking because she actually visualizes this transition on a cellular energy level.
Yeah.
The brain is an incredibly energy-hungry organ, right? And it uses glucose as its primary fuel.
Right, glucose.
But here's the kicker. The brain cells need estrogen to effectively absorb that glucose. Estrogen is essentially the key that unlocks the door so the fuel can actually get inside the cell.
Okay, which completely explains the brain fog.
Yes.
Because when estrogen levels start to just wildly fluctuate and plummet during perimenopause, which is that turbulent transition phase leading up to the 12-month mark, the brain is literally being starved of its primary energy source.
It's experiencing an acute energy crisis. The neurons slow down. And that manifests as those infamous memory lapses, the difficulty finding words, the profound exhaustion, and just this sudden inability to concentrate.
But it goes even deeper than brain fog, right? Because, keeping with the smart home analogy, the power isn't just fluctuating. The internal wiring is actually starting to rust.
Yeah, that's the scary part. Dr. Moscone's brain scans actually revealed that Alzheimer's plaques, you know, the biological markers for Alzheimer's disease, they begin forming in women's brains during this exact perimenopause transition.
In midlife?
Yeah.
That is terrifying. We are talking about women in their 40s and early 50s starting to develop the physical architecture of Alzheimer's long before old age.
And the comparative data makes it look even starker, because when she compared the brain scans of perimenopausal women to men of the exact same age, the men had barely any plaques.
Wow.
Yeah, their brains were structurally sound. Meanwhile, the women showed a statistically significant increase in plaque formation.
Okay, let me stop you there for a second because I have to play devil's advocate for the guys listening right now.
Sure, go for it.
Because I have an uncle who went to a clinic a few years ago. He was tired, he was losing muscle mass, feeling grumpy, and they diagnosed him with quote-unquote low T, low testosterone. People throw around the term male menopause or andropause all the time. So doesn't the male Wi-Fi router eventually go offline too?
It's a totally valid question, but the clinical data paints a vastly different picture. The American Heart Association has actually looked closely at the cardiovascular and systemic impacts of male aging. And yes, in men, testosterone levels do absolutely decline.
Okay.
But the mechanism of that decline is key. It begins in a man's mid-30s and continues at an average rate of roughly 1.6% a year.
Wait, just 1.6% a year? So yeah. If you are losing 1.6% a year, your body has an immense amount of time to just adapt to the new normal.
Precisely the point. It is a very slow, very gradual, very steady slope. The male body is never subjected to a sudden systemic shutdown of its primary signaling hormone.
Women, on the other hand, face a biological cliff edge. Their hormonal shift is rapid, it's concentrated over a few volatile years, and the levels just fluctuate wildly before eventually bottoming out. The sheer velocity of the change is what throws the female body into chaos.
So the male experience of a gradual 1.6% decline simply does not require the same kind of acute systemic adaptation. It's like a gentle stroll down a hill versus being pushed out of an airplane without a parachute.
Exactly. And that really validates the core argument in Piru's article, you know? The female experience requires a unique, urgent empathy because society, and specifically the men in that society, do not experience anything biologically comparable.
And because those estrogen receptors are scattered throughout every system in the body, jumping off that cliff doesn't just cause one universal symptom. The physical reality of this transition is incredibly diverse.
So diverse. We mentioned the near-term symptoms like the hot flushes, the severe sleep disruption, and the profound anxiety and mood swings driven by the brain's energy crisis. But then you have to look at the silent, long-term systemic risks, like osteoporosis, which, again, comes right back to the cellular mechanism.
Yeah, let's look at how that actually works.
Yeah.
Because bones aren't just dead scaffolding, right? They're living tissue.
Yeah.
They're constantly being broken down and rebuilt. Hmm? You have cells that break down old bone called osteoclasts and cells that build new bone called osteoblasts.
Okay.
Estrogen acts as a supervisor, keeping the bone dissolving cells in check. So when estrogen vanishes, the supervisor basically leaves the building. Those dissolving cells go into overdrive, breaking down bone much faster than it could be rebuilt.
Which leads to rapidly plummeting bone density, making women highly vulnerable to devastating fractures later in life. Plus, obviously, the significantly increased risk of cardiovascular disease once the protective effects of estrogen on the blood vessels are gone.
Right.
But what I found totally unexpected in our research stack today is how these physiological symptoms are dramatically shaped by geography and culture. We tend to think of biology as this universal constant, you know, but the symptom spectrum actually changes depending on where you look.
It is a fascinating intersection of genetics, environment, and societal focus. Western medical literature has historically obsessed over vasomotor symptoms, so the hot flushes and night sweats. But we looked at this massive systematic review of menopausal women in India, conducted by researchers Dr. Ankita Shah and Dr. Hardini Prajapati.
Yeah.
And it completely upends that Western-centric view.
Right. They focused on data from regions like Punjab and Haryana.
Exactly. And in those specific regions, the study showed that the most prevalent symptom actually wasn't hot flushes. It was aching in muscles and joints, which affected nearly 88% of the women surveyed.
88%? That is huge.
It is. This was alongside incredibly high rates of severe physical and mental exhaustion. And the mechanism here is likely linked to estrogen's anti-inflammatory properties. When estrogen drops, widespread inflammation can spike, leading to that debilitating joint pain.
Which creates a massive blind spot, doesn't it? If you are a doctor trained primarily on Western medical textbooks, you are actively looking for a patient complaining about hot flushes. You might completely miss that the woman sitting across from you, who is utterly exhausted and complaining of severe knee and shoulder pain, is actually struggling with the onset of perimenopause.
And that misdiagnosis just leads to years of unnecessary suffering. This really highlights a critical gaping hole in the scientific literature. I mean, the historical lack of research in diverse populations is staggering. Women's health has been systemically marginalized on a global scale anyway, but it is exponentially worse for minority ethnic women whose specific biological and cultural experiences have been virtually ignored.
Though it does seem like the scientific community is finally waking up to the financial and social cost of that ignorance. We looked at the recent £320,000 grant from the Medical Research Council that was awarded to the University of Liverpool.
Yeah, that grant is a massive step forward. The researchers at Liverpool are specifically aiming to explore the medical, social, and cultural dimensions of minority ethnic women's experiences of menopause in the UK.
Right. They are looking to uncover exactly how language barriers, different genetic baselines, and cultural stigmas intersect to affect health outcomes. Basically, they want to know what the previous decades of white, Western-centric science completely missed.
And the cultural lens is just so powerful because it makes you wonder how much of the suffering is strictly biological and how much is dictated by the environment you're enduring it in.
Oh, absolutely. We dug into this brilliant historical text by Amarjeet Singh, which contrasts modern Western medicalization with historical views in rural India, and it just forces you to ask deep questions about societal framing.
Because in the modern West, menopause has often been heavily medicalized. It's viewed as a deficiency disease and socially associated with a loss of youth or beauty or value. It's framed as an ending, right?
Yeah, it's very doom and gloom.
But Singh's historical research shows that for many rural Indian women historically, menopause was actually viewed as a profound liberation.
Which is largely because of the cultural baggage attached to menstruation itself in those societies.
Exactly. We have to unpack what daily life was like for these women. Due to strict patriarchal taboos that viewed menstrual blood as polluting, women in their reproductive years were heavily restricted. During their periods, they were often isolated, forbidden from entering temples, participating in religious ceremonies, or attending major social events.
So when the periods finally stopped, the restrictions just vanished with them.
Yeah, the end of menstruation granted them a completely new societal status. They were suddenly allowed to attend temples, engage in the community's religious life, and participate in social events that were previously forbidden to them. They literally described the feeling as becoming, quote, clean and tidy.
Wow.
The transition wasn't an ending at all for them. It was an elevation in freedom.
That is incredible. Culture literally dictated whether this biological event was a curse or a liberation. But, you know, taking all of this in the severe physical reality, the debilitating joint pain, the architectural changes in the brain, the massive diversity of the experience, it begs the ultimate question. Why is this still treated like a taboo secret today? Why are we whispering about the smart home catching on fire?
Well, Piru's article addresses this societal failure head on. The medical establishment has historically been incredibly male-dominated. For centuries, these institutions viewed menopause not as a critical systemic health transition requiring massive funding, support, and innovation, but just as a quote-unquote private inconvenience.
Right. It was dismissed as a women's issue, something to be dealt with quietly and stoically.
And when the medical establishment doesn't take a health crisis seriously, society doesn't take it seriously either. It just breeds this intergenerational culture of silence and shame.
Which brings us to the most crucial part of this deep dive, because recognizing the biological severity and the historical lack of support leads directly to the core mission of Piru's piece. What can you, the listener, do about this right now? No matter who you are, This is essentially a playbook for actionable empathy.
And the playbook is incredibly practical. It starts with women who are currently in their 30s and early 40s, which is the demographic that often assumes menopause is still a distant, irrelevant event.
Mm.
The advice is to start preparing the body before the Wi-Fi signal drops.
Right, because, I mean, you can't just wait until the whole house is pitch black to figure out where the fuse box is.
Exactly. Establishing a baseline is essential. Track your menstrual cycles, track your daily moods, track your sleep quality. Having hard data means that when the perimenopausal fluctuations begin in a few years, you and your doctor aren't just guessing.
But on a purely physiological level, the most critical preparation is building your bone density bank right now.
Yes. Going back to the mechanism we talked about, the osteoclasts and osteoblasts, you want to build as much bone as possible while the estrogen supervisor is still in the building.
Right. You need to hit peak bone mass. Women in their 30s and 40s must prioritize heavy weight-bearing exercises and ensure adequate calcium and vitamin D intake. And furthermore, it is the time to start practicing agility and balance training.
That is so important. Building neuromuscular control now means you are significantly less likely to fall when you are older and your bones are inevitably more vulnerable due to the lack of estrogen.
Okay, so that is the physical preparation. But what about when the symptoms actually hit, particularly in the workplace? Because experiencing a severe hot flush and brain fog in the middle of a high-stakes presentation is, frankly, a nightmare scenario. And it's important to note that not everyone can or even wants to take hormone replacement therapy or HRT.
Right, and this is where we have to look at non-hormonal support systems.
Mm-hmm.
And this is data that every employer really needs to understand. We examined some incredibly innovative research from King's College London regarding cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
Yeah.
Now, we usually associate CBT exclusively with treating mental health conditions like depression or anxiety. But researchers at King's actually developed a menopause-specific CBT intervention.
I found this part so counterintuitive at first. Because CBT is essentially talk therapy, right?
Yeah.
How on earth does identifying your thoughts stop a physical, biologically driven hot sweat?
The mechanism is actually brilliant. The hot flush itself is physical. It is driven by that confused hypothalamus we talked about earlier. But your psychological state acts as an amplifier. If you were sitting in a meeting and feel a hot flush starting, you might immediately panic. You think, oh no, everyone is going to see me sweating. This is humiliating. I'm losing control.
Right.
That psychological panic triggers a stress response. The sympathetic nervous system kicks in, spiking cortisol and adrenaline.
Which is the classic fight or flight response.
Yes. And that adrenaline dump actually provokes the hypothalamus even further, making the hot flush physically hotter, longer, and much more severe.
Wow.
The King's College CBT intervention breaks that feedback loop. It trains women to identify the catastrophic thinking patterns and replace them with calming behavioral responses. By stopping the panic spiral, they keep the adrenaline levels low, which physically reduces the severity of the vasomotor symptom.
And the results were just staggering. The clinical trials showed that both group and self-help CBT reduced the impact of problematic hot flushes and night sweats by an average of 50%.
50%. Just by cutting the impact in half purely through cognitive behavioral techniques, it also significantly improved sleep quality, stabilized mood, and drastically reduced presenteeism at work.
Let's define presenteeism for a second, because it is a massive hidden cost for businesses. Presenteeism is when an employee is physically sitting at their desk, staring at their laptop, but they are entirely unproductive because they haven't slept more than 2 consecutive hours in 3 days, and their brain is experiencing that severe energy crisis we talked about.
Right. So CBT is a highly effective, evidence-based tool that workplaces, families, and healthcare systems can implement right now. It is especially vital for women who absolutely cannot use HRT, like survivors of estrogen receptor positive breast cancers, or those who simply prefer a non-medical route.
That is a total game changer. But this playbook isn't just for women. I mean, Puru's article is called Man on Menopause for a reason. There is a direct cross-generational call to action for the men listening.
Oh, absolutely. It demands participation from every demographic. And it starts with teenage boys. They need to learn empathy and basic biological facts early. They need to understand what is happening so they can support their mothers, their aunts, and their female teachers with patience and kindness, rather than, you know, confusion or mockery.
And for men in their 20s to 40s, the guys who are actively building their careers and managing households.
For that demographic, the mandate is twofold. At work, you must actively participate in building inclusive policies that accommodate this transition without penalizing the employee.
Yeah.
At home, you must offer emotional support without judgment.
Right.
If your partner is experiencing profound anxiety and severe sleep disruption, understanding the biological reality, knowing that her brain is literally being starved of its primary energy source, that completely changes how you respond. You become a partner in navigating the transition rather than a frustrated adversary.
The article even calls out grandfathers, which I thought was a fantastic angle.
It is, because grandfathers hold a unique position of authority as family elders. Mm. By speaking openly about menopause, perhaps asking their daughters how they are managing, or respectfully discussing their own wives' past experiences at the Sunday dinner table, they leverage their elder status to normalize the conversation. If the patriarch of the family refuses to treat it as a taboo, it basically dismantles the stigma for the entire extended family.
I love the mechanics of that. But I do have to push back just a little on the scale of this. Does a 15-year-old boy being a little more patient with his mom, or a college guy learning about estrogen receptors, really move the needle on a global women's health issue? I mean, it sounds nice, but does it actually change medical funding or corporate policy?
It changes everything if you accept the underlying philosophy that Puru presents. The argument is that the current state of affairs, the silence, the lack of workplace support, the marginalization in medical research, is a social disease.
Mm-hmm.
Menopause itself is a natural biological transition, is not an illness. But abandoning half the population to suffer through a systemic physical transformation in utter silence, well, that is a profound social disease.
And you cannot cure a social disease with just a pill or a single policy change.
Exactly. The cure has to be cultural. When a young man approaches women's health with empathy and scientific understanding, he breaks the intergenerational cycle of isolation. That 15-year-old boy grows up to be a manager who approves flexible working hours for perimenopausal staff a decade from now. He grows up to be the researcher who designs clinical trials that actually include minority ethnic women.
Right. And to make that cultural shift permanent, the ultimate argument here is for systemic change specifically, integrating menopause education into school curriculums globally.
Yes.
Just as we teach children the mechanics of puberty, we must teach them the mechanics of menopause. It normalizes the entire arc of the human life cycle. It equips future generations, regardless of their gender, to support themselves and each other.
It really is a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
You need rigorous education, personal health tracking, medical innovation that actually respects diverse populations, and above all, active cross-generational empathy.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? If we step back and look at the sheer scale of the biology, the history, and the sociology we've covered today, the core thesis is undeniably true. Menopause is a universal human issue, period. And I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked extensively about that 1.6% gradual decline in male hormones versus the sudden, chaotic cliff edge of female menopause. Think about the modern world you navigate every day. Think about the standard 40-hour work week, the rigid daily corporate schedules, the specific ways our medical systems prioritize research funding, and even the physical design of our office spaces.
Right.
These foundational structures were originally designed historically and almost exclusively by men. Men who experience a slow, steady 1.6% hormonal stroll down a hill.
A completely different, much more predictable biological reality.
Exactly. So ask yourself, how entirely different would our society, our workplaces, and our healthcare systems look today if those structures had been built from the ground up by and for people who undergo the sudden systemic full body transformation of menopause? It makes you realize that the Wi-Fi hasn't just been occasionally dropping out. The house was built with the wrong wiring from the very start.